Okay, thanks everybody. And this is another edition of Conversations with Dr. Cowan and Friends. One of the challenges is always to learn how to say people's names properly, because I'm not very good. I don't know if Becky, you've ever heard me say this, but I have this uncanny ability to remember even people I saw 40 years ago, their diagnosis, or but I can't remember their name.
You know, I think a lot of doctors are like that.
Yeah, I think.
Remember so many details about people, and then that personal touch can sometimes get lost.
Yeah, right. I remember you had the lump on your sh and your shin, right? Yeah. What's your name? I have no idea. Anyways, so but your name is Becky Peebles,
Yes.
and I am very happy to announce that Becky is the newest of our new doctors, which means A, we're growing and getting more members and expecting to grow even more. And B, that lets us diversify people's experience because it's an interesting thing. When you choose somebody to talk to or help, I'm not even sure I like the word go to a doctor anymore. It is a very personal experience, and not everybody works. And even sometimes it's gender, you'd rather talk to a female or a male or vice versa. Or it's just sometimes some people have had the experience of working with Wegener's granulomatosis, whatever that is, and other people are into, injuries. And that makes a huge difference. So, anyways, Becky, welcome. And I usually start this by. So tell us, just sort of introduce yourself. And then the big question is, how would anybody want to end up deciding to work for a new biology clinic? That's always the most interesting.
That's a good
Anyways,
question.
welcome and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So I am by training a family and sports medicine doctor, family medicine residency, and then sports medicine fellowship to follow. But backing up further than that, I went to an osteopathic school, and that was not an accident. I think some people apply to medical school and they just go to wherever they get in. I knew from the start that I wanted to be an osteopath because I had learned about that foundational philosophy. And it was one of those aha moments. I was always fascinated with the body as a kid, like studying the muscles and how they worked. Being an athlete, that came very natural. But then when I learned, oh, the body can actually heal itself, and we can, as physicians, we can help facilitate that in a lot of ways. It was like, that's in my mind, that's the only way, like I'm doing that or I'm not going to med school.
Wow.
So I did that training. Again, very intentional. I had a huge interest in the complementary and alternative approach with
Even before medical school.
even before medical school.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always found this stuff really, really interesting. And I think a lot of it is, again, going back to you, I grew up doing competitive dance and tumbling. I played rugby in college, all sorts of sports. And when you're in those realms, there's a role, so we're told, for medication and all of that. But when you have an injury, how do we get the body to heal? When you're in sports, we're taxing the body and oftentimes overtaxing the body. So how
Yeah.
can we support that? And then there's also a lot of rules and regulation about medications and treatments that you can and can't use. And so, knowing I also wanted to do sports medicine, I found as an injured athlete at a very young age, when a doctor told me, hey, movement's your medicine. We need to keep you in your sport. It's going to keep you healthy mentally as you're healing physically. It was this big aha moment of like, this is what I want to do. So, finding ways to support that was really important to me. So, kind of like had the end goal before I had the means of getting there. So, osteopathy was no question. I had to do that. So graduated from Texas College of Osteopathic Medicine. And
You know,
then,
Becky, I'm going to stop you there
yeah.
because it's funny because I didn't know anything of, I'd never met an osteopath growing up. I didn't know anything about it. And when I eventually had the revelation that I wanted to be a doc, I mean, I sort of knew I was going to be a doctor, but I didn't like it because I didn't like what they did. And then when I
Yeah.
learned there's another way, I applied to medical school and Michigan State Osteopath School. But to show you how little I knew about it, when I went for my interview, they asked me, why do I want to be an osteopath? And I said, I didn't care whether I was an osteopath or an MD. And turns out Michigan State was leading the fight to not have them be the same. There was a time back in the early 80s, 70s, where They wanted to do away with the distinction
Yeah.
and just have them be medical doctors. And these guys didn't want that. It was Upledger and a few other people there.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that. And so, as you can imagine, I didn't get in.
Yeah, that conversation for diehard osteopaths that really believe in the osteopathic philosophy, that would be very insulting. So,
Yes, that was a huge, this guy's an idiot kind of moment.
yeah, well, kind of like you, I didn't know what osteopathy was. I never went to an osteopath growing up. I had never actually, until my cousin went to an osteopathic school, I had never even had a treatment, never went to the chiropractor or anything like that. So I had a cousin that was going to an osteopathic school, and she came down for a family visit and lined our entire family, starting with my grandparents, like lined us up on the floor and went from person to person treating. And I already had this vision going to medical school, like this is just what I want to do with my life. And it was that aha moment that clicked because she was talking through like why she was doing the things that she was doing them because she knew I had an interest in medicine. And that was that, like, okay, it's this way or no way.
Yeah, it's like actually they do something
Yeah.
opposed
Well, they
to
do.
medical.
They do something without medication.
Yeah,
Like,
they
this is the
don't, they
body
right,
healing
they actually
itself.
do something.
Yeah. And it's just so cool. So it gives you that extra toolbox. I don't need a lot of tools. I have my hands.
Yeah.
And for a lot of people, that's all you need. You need your ears to listen and your hands to maybe help realign things. So,
All right, so then what happens?
yeah. So then I went to family medicine residency, and that was kind of a like, how am I going to get to my end goal? So I spent some time with orthopedic surgeons and knew. Well, one, I didn't enjoy their clinic. It just wasn't enough variety for me, even though I really enjoyed the musculoskeletal part. But also, I didn't want that lifestyle. I knew I wanted a family and a little bit of a balance at some point when I finished training. So then it was like, okay, pediatrics. But that, again, it was limiting because it's only kids and they don't do as many procedures. I really enjoyed the procedural aspect of it at that time. So family medicine, I mean, it's really all encompassing. It's cradle to grave. You treat everything, you treat everyone, and you also coordinate care for people, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
So did that, followed on with a sports medicine fellowship and learned all of the like diagnostic ultrasound, all the cool procedural things there, and started working with higher level athletes, which was just fun. Graduated from that, and so I was in the Air Force at that time, and in the Air Force, there's two paths that you get as a sports medicine doc. You either go operational and you're with like special forces, or you end up teaching in a family medicine residency. So I was residency faculty at a fellowship, which was so fun. I've been in medical education my entire career. And that also, as soon as I landed as faculty, I was able to apply for medical acupuncture training, and the Air Force put me through that. So another thing that I was really interested in was how else can we use non-pharmaceutical ways to treat people?
Yeah.
And just that kind of, I had a sense that there was something more to the body because you start treating people like family medicine, we see all kinds of stuff. But you also get the patients that have seen all the specialists and been bounced around the system, and they're coming back to you as their primary care doc. You're the jack of all trades, and they're like, hey, doc, like, where do I go from here? I have these symptoms. A lot of times, symptoms don't fit into a clean diagnosis like we're taught in medical school. It's this or that, the differential diagnosis, but that doesn't work for most people. And so
Yeah.
they come back to the primary care doc, and it's like, okay, what now? And so I really found that there was a huge gap in my training, a gap in my knowledge of like, what do I do for these people? So the energetic side of medical acupuncture training really interested me. Again, it's another tool in the toolbox, but it also helped me understand the body at a deeper level. There's so much going on from that energetic standpoint that we don't explore in medical school. But the
Yeah.
design of medical school, again, being in medical training or medical education my entire career, you're drinking from a fire hose. Like people use that cheesy analogy, but it's the perfect model of, okay, there's so much information flying at you and you're trying to absorb it to do well on the test to progress, but it really limits your ability to think outside the box. It
Yeah.
really limits your ability to be that questioning student. And we definitely have some questioning students. I'm still working with medical students right now, and we have those couple that like are just always the this doesn't seem quite right. What about this? What about that? And I applaud that and I try to encourage that, but they don't have a lot of time to really dig deep at that level. So, yeah,
Or
medical.
probably anybody that would could even help them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's frowned upon, especially at that level, because they have to learn the
Yeah.
basics. They have to learn the foundation of what we're taught as physicians in allopathic or osteopathic medical schools in this Western medicine culture.
Yeah.
So,
Okay. So then what happens?
Yeah, then well, I practiced for a couple years, was having fun integrating the acupuncture into and osteopathy into my practice. We decided, so the pandemic came out, and that raised a lot of questions. There was a lot of changes going on in military medicine at the time too, that it just made family balance, family work balance difficult. So after a lot of prayer, my husband and I decided to separate from the Air Force and move back home to be closer to family and try to find a better balance with work and stuff. That didn't happen. So I took a corporate medicine job. This is my first like big girl job outside of the military, and found myself working 80 hours a week.
Wow.
And it was cool stuff. I was standing up a department, I was standing up training programs, I was working with a bunch of different levels of trainees in medical education. But man, I tell you what, working that much, and again, I think a lot of people can relate to that because a lot of working America is overworked, underrested, right? So it was the first time, and I had had waves of, yeah, I'm stressed. Yeah, I'm working too much. Yeah, I don't have a good work-life balance. But it was the first time in my career where I literally worked myself into clinical depression, anxiety, like illness.
Yeah.
And it was just such an eye-opening experience. My dream career, what I thought was going to be my dream career, ended up like making me super sick. So, taking a step back and just kind of reflecting on, okay, what do I need to recharge? What do I need to get healthy again? Through my entire life, but especially medical school, residency, like those times where I was working more indoors a lot because that's just your training, the ways that I found myself recharging wasn't going to bed and getting extra sleep. It was, we would go hiking, we'd go camping. I've always been called to the mountains and I just feel at home there. And even like a 4 day, on the rare occasion we had a 4 day in training, right? We would go on a camping trip and probably not sleep much, definitely do too much outdoor activity. It was not restful, but I was so recharged in those moments.
Yeah.
And so thinking back to just where, like where I'm drawn, what I always go to when I'm stressed or when I'm tired, it was the, hey, I've got to cut back. I've got to reconnect with nature. I've got to find ways to start doing the things that fulfill me and just make sense. And it makes sense for my kids too. Like my kids are happiest when they're outside playing in the dirt. We adopted a box turtle this week. So instead of buying food, they're out in my yard digging for worms, looking for cicadas, and I haven't seen them happier all summer.
Yeah.
We connect with nature, but our society, especially when you're working and trying to do all these things in medicine, especially, we just disconnect and it's so easy to lose sight of that. So, why new biology? I haven't gotten to that yet, but it ties into all of this. So, again, always really drawn to the more alternative ways of practicing alternative by Western measures. And then wanting to find ways to help my patients reconnect with nature, reconnect with themselves, learn to listen and have that intuition. I found one of the ways in my clinical practice, even though the system makes it really hard because the appointments are so short, you're rushed all the time. I really dug into, okay, why are you here? And it's the why behind the problem. My medical learners always tease me and they get so frustrated with me because they'll come in, they'll be like, Dr. Peebles, the patient has chondromalacia of the patella or whatever. And I'm like, okay, great, but why? Well, but Dr. Peebles, I got the diagnosis. I don't care. Why do they have it? Because if you
Yeah.
treat it, it's not going to get better. It's just going to come back for most things. And so, and it was like that for family medicine stuff too. Oh, they have hypertension. I want to increase their whatever medication. Okay, well, why do they have hypertension? Well, they have hypertension.
Yeah,
Okay,
I
but
mean
hold on.
that was out, a lot of it, as I'm sure you've heard me say, is, guy comes into world famous dermatologist and says, I have a rash. You do $1,000 or more of workup. What's the diagnosis? Eczema, which is Latin for rash. And I was kept waiting for somebody to say, wait a minute, I told you I had a rash. That's not a diagnosis. That's
And
a translation into another language.
yeah, but it's hard because in the system, it's time consuming to one, get all the information. It's time consuming to listen to the patient's story, but that's where you figure out what's going on with them and how to help
Yeah.
them. And then it's time consuming to give them tools to start working through, okay, what's the next step? I found myself in this hustle and bustle system, Every half day of clinic, I was an hour and a half behind. So you can imagine that got me called into the principal's office once or
Yeah,
twice.
right.
And I told my administrators, I said, look, here's the thing. The patients who didn't appreciate that, who got annoyed that I was always behind, have left my practice. The ones who know that I will give them the same attention and time and investment that made me an hour and a half behind their appointment have stayed, and they appreciate that. And I just refused to be a bad doctor. So in the end, I ended up deciding that that wasn't a system that I could practice well in, and branching out and opening my own clinic. And I think that's just the best way for me to be able to really take care of people. So through that transition, we started looking more and more into, okay, what are all of these? I mean, I don't know that we'll ever know what all of the tools are, but what else can we be incorporating into my practice to help me better help people? It's hard to find. The industry does not make this information readily available. In fact, I think they don't really want us to have this
Yeah.
information in a lot of ways. And a lot of this information isn't written up in a lot of shareable, easy to find avenues. So finding online docs like yourself and other podcasts, I started there and just listening. Okay, where are they getting their information? A lot of you are really good about sharing your resources, which is helpful too, because then I can go back to the source and say, okay, this isn't just some guy on YouTube that's talking about something. Let's go back to the literature. And it is evidence-based medicine at its finest, but looking at, okay, what are we doing with this evidence? Where did this evidence come from? And questioning and then figuring out what to do with it and go there. But it's hard when you're on your own. So when I learned
Yeah.
about, I knew of New Biology Clinic, but and it's funny, I had looked at your website probably a year and a half ago, maybe, and just kind of scrolling through the providers or the primary wellness specialists and thinking, I wonder how they got here. And just that like little fleeting thought of, hey, maybe someday I could do something like this. And so we ended up going to Confluence this year and talked to a bunch of people, and someone gave me a lead. They said, hey, New Biology is growing and might be looking for more primary wellness specialists. This is something, knowing kind of your interests and all of that, might give you a little more community and a little more outlet to be able to help people in the ways that you're already doing. And so sent you guys an email, and now we're chatting.
Yeah. So it sounds, Becky, like, first of all, it's possible for you to interact with just about anybody, whatever their problem is. But you do have a special expertise in what they call sports medicine. Now, which I interpret as people who are athletic, who are not able to do their sport optimally because something is wrong. Is that close?
No, so it's a huge misnomer, and this is something that
Okay.
we've struggled with. One of my roles when I first got out of the military was to open a sports medicine department. And with that misnomer, it's hard because people make that assumption. And it's like, well, sports medicine, especially primary care sports medicine, we do so much more than that. So sports medicine is just, I don't know why they call it that. Yes, we work with high-level athletes by way
Yeah.
of our training, and I've done that. I've worked with collegiate athletes at a pretty high level, and that's been super fun. I'm one of the head physicians for the World Championship Ironman in Hawaii. Like, I get to do that kind of stuff, and it's fun. But really, on the day-to-day, we're taking care of average people. We're taking care of the industrial worker with tennis elbow. We're taking care of the grandpa that just wants to be able to run around with his grandkids that has arthritis in his knee. We're taking care of, and then also with the primary care side of it, we're taking care of those medical things like high blood pressure or overexertion, which causes a lot of imbalances of hormones and stuff. We're taking care of that in the context of sport. And we're doing it in a lot of like really natural ways most of the time, because athletes don't need to be on blood pressure medications, for example. There's a high risk of them having a lot of problems like tanking their electrolytes,
Yeah.
or things like that. And so I think with that, yes, it's a lot of musculoskeletal medicine and overcoming injuries, but it's a lot of also just taking care of the body, learning how to use movement as medicine,
You
supporting the
know,
body in natural ways.
what I'd be interested in your opinion about this, and it's a complex and maybe unanswerable question, but I grew up pretty much the only thing I did until I was 18, besides reading Russian novels, which I loved, which is weird, like The Underground Man and weird stuff, Dostoevsky, was play sports.
Yeah.
So I was, the only white kid on one of the best all black basketball teams in Detroit, and shortstop on the baseball team, and number two high school golfer in Michigan, kind of thing. So I was a jock, a Dostoevsky reading jock. But so I knew, and I know sports, like I get sports. But here's the thing. When I grew up, no really good athlete, basically, that's an exaggeration, but missed the playoffs with torn Achilles tendon, with ruptured, with ACL injuries, or Tommy John surgery. Like that, the best athletes, and all the way down, we didn't get injured like that. And now it's a huge part of any sports. It's how good are you, and how likely is your team to make it intact to the end, right? I mean, that's not an exaggeration. And the question is why? And I've heard a lot of answers, everything from overtraining to mechanical training to adrenal exhaustion to EMF exposure on like treadmills, and that dries out their tendons. Do you have any blanket? Because it'd be interesting for people like that to come to us,
Yeah,
because
definitely.
they're losing their livelihood, and we're losing this. It never was like this, and Al Kaline never got injured.
Yeah, I think it's so multifactorial, right? I don't think there's any single answer for this. I think so. We blame sports specialization a lot. And that's the whole concept of kids from a very young age get slotted into whether it's their favorite sport or the sport that they're best at or whatever the case is, but they're playing travel sports and exclusively playing that sport year round from a very young age. That probably shouldn't happen until the age of 12, maybe even a little bit later, because you're training the same muscle groups over and over. And then you're also potentially just burning them out of sport. They get tired of it after a while. If they play multiple sports, they're moving their bodies in different ways and training their brain in different ways. And so it keeps it fun, it keeps it fresh. There's not much of an off season. And that's not unique for youth sports. A lot of even professional sports don't have a true off season. I was talking to a coach the other day, and he was comparing his sport to other sports. And I said, well, your sport doesn't have an off season. You guys compete all year long, though you may not be training for the competition all year long. And he said, well, the funny thing is, when we're training for competition, that's kind of our off season because we're not doing all the conditioning and the other stuff. We're just focusing on those sport specific skills. So, but it's still high level pounding all the time. So you mentioned the adrenal fatigue aspect of it. That's a huge component for our athletes. I think with nutrition, especially here in America, we don't support our bodies with good fuel. And that helps us, or that hurts us because we're not able to recover. But then we have, especially our younger athletes, don't do the foundational things of resting. They're on their devices. So they get off of practice, they go, they're on their devices, filling their brains full of whatever blue light, EMS, whatever it is. And then when they do go to sleep, they're probably not sleeping well. They've got this whole FOMO component too, where their brain is just constantly going. And then I think we lose a lot, even though a lot of athletes spend a lot of time outside, especially if their sports are outdoor sports. It's not the kind of outside where they're reconnecting with nature a lot of times. It's the, hey, I'm throwing my cleats on and I'm going out onto the pitch to do my sport for an hour, 2 hours, but I'm constantly like grinding my body in the process. We're not taking our shoes off and sitting down and grounding and
Or climbing
stopping and slowing
trees and
down.
just looking at the sky, and
I mean, we see that even with our kids. It was funny. We went to Confluence this year, and my kids, who love to be outside, but we got there kind of late, went to bed in our tent, and then woke up the next morning. And it took my kids probably about an hour and a half to, I was joking, I called it de-citify, de-citify. Like, oh, I'm dirty. Oh, this is yucky. Oh, there's flies. Oh, and then about an hour and a half later, they were covered in dirt, chasing a barn cat around, going to see pigs and all sorts of other things. And they were crying when we left. And I feel like our athletes don't have a chance to play, especially when we start pulling them into sports as a kid. And they, again, they just kind of lose that connection.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know that there's a single answer for that, but I do feel like everything has changed so much in how we push people and how we care for our bodies or don't care for them.
Like nobody plays golf, they work golf. And I used to also say, they call golf a sport. I called it a disease because, you're just, and you're grinding your body in a way that's, it lasts your life, at least. So maybe let's finish. So, and I have usually used, which is sort of right up your alley. So, 40-year-old woman says bilateral knee swelling doesn't feel so good, just diagnosed with a positive rheumatoid factor. She says, I don't want to take Enbrel because whatever reason. And so I'm going to go to the Nubalgie and I'm going to go to Becky and see what she has. What does that look like?
Again, multifactorial in both what's got her there and how we approach that. So I would say just starting with figuring out when her symptoms started, figuring out what flares her symptoms. She needs to figure
So,
all
like,
of,
what happened to you?
yeah, what happened? When did this start? When do you notice your symptoms are worse? What kind of things have you noticed make it better? And just really digging into the why behind the problem, which is not my job to tell. It's my job to ask questions and just help her navigate that and try to figure it out. And we may never get to the exact why, but I think we can get a lot of foundational pieces to help her start moving forward. And I found with especially these types of patients, because a lot of times the symptoms are vague, they build for a long period of time, and it's tough to get an actual diagnosis. A lot of times they get like that weekly positive ANA where it's like, it's not positive for anything specific. And then the rheumatologist is like, eh, that could be also just a false positive, or a subset of the population has positive ANA and it doesn't mean anything. And then they're again back in the primary care office, like, well, what do I do now? So then taking it back to, again, just let's go back to the basics. How are you eating? Like, what kind of foods are you eating? Because if we're filling our foods with, or our bodies with inflammatory foods, all of the processed stuff, or even trying to eat a fairly healthy diet, as we put it, there's probably still things that we can do to support the body better and decrease inflammation. How are you moving? If you're not moving, that's definitely a problem. Movement is a huge part of taking care of our joints, whether they have arthritis, whether they're swelling, whether it doesn't really matter. And then moving them in positive ways. Like you can see, we do a lot of races. That may not be the answer for her. In fact, that's probably not the answer for most people because that's a lot of extra stress on the body. But finding ways that support the body in movement. And then just working from there. And I like Nubiology Clinic. The model is so cool. You guys have so many people that can help contribute to the healing process. Like this would be a great patient for Monica to work with. So getting her to understand, like, okay, what types of foods and how can I prepare them, would best support me. This would be a great person to just do get back to some of those primal movements, like, right? So there's so many ways that we can incorporate a team approach and just help her feel heard, help her find her story and move forward through that healing process, and then see how she does and modify it as we go.
Got it. All right. Anything else you wanted to just tell anybody who's listening about who you are, what you're do doing, or just any final words here?
Yeah, I'm really excited to get started. I'm excited to have a platform where not only can I have the space and time to talk to people and hear their stories and figure out how we can best help them, but also have this community of professionals where behind the scenes going and learning and discussing and figuring out how to challenge the information that we were taught in ways that are really helpful for healing and supporting our bodies. As I mentioned, I've been in medical education my whole career. My favorite piece of that has always been like we take the information back to you as a learner. It's your preceptor, and you talk to them and you go through the case with them. And then working in a residency program or a fellowship, you have those colleagues and you say, okay, I've got this tough case. Let's talk about it. And everybody brings a piece to the table from their own experiences, their own research. Nubiology has this amazing team where we can learn from each other, we can bounce ideas off of each other and really support people, not just from our own wisdom or our own learnings, but really from a huge team or growing team with a huge background of information and resources.
Got it. All right. Well, thank you, Becky. And I think this gives people a great idea. And I personally am thrilled to have you with us. And it is the most fun medical situation I've ever been part of, because every single meeting we have, it's like, well, I never thought of that. Or it's like somebody has something to say which is new, and we're just trying to figure it out because there's not much of a blueprint out there.
No, there really isn't. But people don't come with an instruction book. Nobody has a
Yeah,
blueprint that they should
we
be
don't have
following. So it's kind of nice that we don't have a blueprint because we can build it or help people build it as we go.
it. And the other thing that goes along with that, all of us seem to know, as opposed to what you hear in conventional med, oh, I know what to do. Like, yeah, right. So all of us are familiar enough through our own lives with, yeah, we really don't. We don't have the answer, but let's talk about what we can find out, and we'll find out what works.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thank you again, and welcome. And yeah, we will see you soon.
Thank you.
All right, Becky. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, I think we're
All
good.
right. Awesome. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Have a good day.